Hello, and welcome back to the Joint Venture Podcast, Inspiratia Insights. In the run-up to Inspiratia's highly anticipated Energy Storage Summit 2023, we are bringing you a discussion of experts before the event to give you a taste of the themes that will be covered on the day. Inspiratia's head of content, Viola Cao, sat down with three market experts to go over the trials for the market in the coming months and talk about the successes that have led energy storage into the realms of investability. I'll let Viola introduce her guests.
Welcome to Inspiratia's Energy Storage webinar. We are here to open the debate and set the scene for the energy storage sector's investment landscape ahead of our Energy Storage Summit, which will take place in London on the 18th of October. Joining us today are Ben Francis, Greenfield Director at InfraCapital and Non-Executive Director at Zenobi, David Menendez, MD for UK MBES at FRV, Gareth Baker, partner at Gowling WLG. Welcome, everyone. So without further ado, I would start the discussion by asking a fairly general and straightforward question. So energy storage has gained some significant ground over the past year. Are investors now completely comfortable with the technology, would you say?
I'm happy to take this first. I think, yes, so in terms of lithium-ion battery energy storage projects, I would say that technology is an important consideration, but is largely a risk which investors are now comfortable with. And in terms of lithium-ion battery projects, I think when I think of some of the challenges and concerns raised by investors, it's probably more associated to the revenues and not the technology. When we sort of think about maybe broader asset classes or assets within the energy storage sector, when we think about new battery technologies, for example, and perhaps some of the more longer duration storage projects or technologies like liquid air, I think there is probably a slightly different consideration where there probably are still concerns around some of the technology risk, which investors are going to have to get comfortable with for those sort of subsectors of the energy storage sector to be able to become investable from infrastructure investors.
Thank you, Ben. And David, what would you say from a developer's point of view?
Well, the nice thing that the market, especially in some specific countries, you know, has evolved in the last 5 years very quickly and is getting, you know, at a mature stage where developers and other, let's say, players are getting more comfortable with. But there is always, you know, question marks and doubts and concerns about how in the long term, you know, the regulation will change or will keep in a, let's say, in a steady state. How the profitability in terms of the revenue sources and the stacking of revenues will evolve with the volatility in the electricity market pricing, and especially how the macroeconomic, you know, will impact in the long term. So when we are developing projects, thinking later on investment decisions, at the end we are looking for a 20, 30, 40 years, you know, in the future. And there are many questions and doubts that needs to be solved, but bit by bit, comfortable. We are getting more comfortable as developers and as investors to this market.
Thank you. That's interesting. So it sounds like that more a technology issue. It's more like concerns or like questions around the revenue model and the impact the macroeconomic environment can have on this sector. Gareth, from legal advisor point of view, what are you hearing on this from your clients in this space?
Well, it's interesting that the question is calibrated on the basis of how's the past year been, because I really believe, based on what we've seen, it's been a year of two halves. So the first half saw a lot of activity, some great pricing achieved by developers on disposals. And we saw a number of new entrants, particularly on the equity side, but also on the debt side, new banks coming into the market. We'll probably talk about the Zenobi deal a little bit later on in this podcast. But if you look at the and I'll say the sub 4 hour market now, which is fundamentally batteries, in the last 6 months, there have also been some challenges. And I think those challenges have been partly because volatility has been lower, but also the macro case, which assumes a certain level of deployment, hasn't been helped, I think, by what's just happened with offshore wind in round five of the CFD. So this technology assumes a particular level of deployment of renewables. And so we'll see whether that has an impact on what people believe as the wider macro environment. So a lot busier than previous years, but we've seen a year of two halves.
Thank you. That's a couple of interesting references there to both the Sunovideal and I thought, I don't know, maybe Ben, would you like to like touch on that a little bit and explain to us what that means for the company and what specifically in relation to the sector?
Yeah. So as people probably aware, Zenobē has two main business units. Electric buses, deployment electric buses, but then also a large sort of operational base of grid-connected battery assets and a pipeline of a strong pipeline of assets in the UK, in Europe, and Australia, and the US. We've recently just completed a large fundraising activity, bringing KKR into the business as a new institutional investor into the business. In terms of Zenobē, the focus on Zenobē is really on developing complex assets, which are large, typically transmission connected, are large, are in areas where there are constraints around the grid and there's barriers to entry. And the reason why we do that is because ultimately we're looking to develop assets which have the most robust revenue stream possible. And that's be sort of maximizing contracted revenues, whether it be with a route to market provider or with National Grid through the Pathfinder regime or through other revenue streams, and being able to deploy projects at the lowest possible capex through scale. And ultimately, those projects then become, from an investment perspective, very interesting because you've got a high degree of contracted revenues against the investment costs, and you've got increasing comfort around sort of barriers to entry into those areas or regions where those assets are deployed, to give you sort of more comfort around the merchant aspect of the revenues, and that's a very clear strategy of Zenobē to be developing those assets, and it's been achieved to date really by building a very strong in-house technical team who are leading the way in some of the technical developments around uses of batteries for different services to the grid, a very strong procurement team which is able to procure batteries at a competitive rate in a very difficult market, and a team of experts, sort of financing experts, who are able to raise the most sort of cost competitive and optimal financings for the assets as well.
Yeah, thank you very much for providing a bit of an overview on that one. Obviously, it's a pretty timely deal. We've just covered this, so I thought it'd be an helpful one to like go over in this discussion. Going back to energy storage as a sector more broadly, what do you reckon was the main factor, or many factors, if there are more than one, that contributed to making energy storage go from an emerging to a more proven technology?
I think there are a couple of factors. I think the first one that we saw as really unlocking things was the technology itself being more proven, being more tested, being a risk that people could get more comfortable with. For us, the subsequent step that really started to unlock things was what we were seeing in the route to market space. People, particularly on the utility side, coming out with options that fundamentally meant that these projects could be financeable. And that was the typical players that one has seen in the PPA market, in both offshore wind and also solar, but also the development of an optimizer market, frankly, gives a different option if a particular developer isn't necessarily wholly in the market for debt and maybe wants to take an alternative strategy to managing and trading the battery. So I do think those two things came together, possibly also with a lot of development potential in the UK, wanting to get on with projects that they could put through the system quickly. There's also a lot going on in solar at the moment, but the planning regime means that, you know, those projects take a couple of years to get through if you're building anything over 50 megawatts, whereas with batteries, we've seen quite quickly the size of these schemes going up and up and up. Some of them, frankly, reaching, you know, a gigawatt. Some of the more sort of published ones recently. So I think it's those three things really that have really seen this market kick on in the last 24 months.
Yeah, for me, I will say that it depends on the time horizon that we are, you know, we are looking at. No, I mean, if we look back 10 years ago, I will say that, you know, to identify what was this business about, I think we still are at the, let's say, stone age of this market, with some players and some regions, you know, in a very advanced, let's say, a mature stage, with others across Europe and other jurisdictions in a different, let's say, market status. No, but if I have to pick really, let's say, more on the technological aspects, I will say that I think there has been a tipping point with the, let's say, disruption of the EV. So the EV has radically changed, you know, and increased the affordability of batteries on the lithium ion space. The implementation of gigafactories has, you know, support the development of these projects and the development of this market. The penetration of renewables and the exponential growth during the last year, I think, has at the end create an opportunity for this type of projects. And also related with the other points, I would say that also the development on solar applications, specifically for, you know, the operation on the, let's say, on the trading activities, has played a key role, no? How to, in real time, being able to stack different, let's say, services and participating in different markets couldn't have been possible without the increased development on the software side of, let's say, of new applications.
Thanks, David. And Ben, what is your take on this one from an investor's point of view?
I think from our perspective, we've got in the lithium ion battery space, we've got comfortable with the track record, the operational data we're getting from our existing assets, now been sort of operating for 6 or 7 years, seeing the levels of factor of safety in the design around the capacity as well, and seeing degradation in line with what we would expect. And ultimately, you know, a lot of due diligence has been done on the technology and the providers. So it's been a number of factors, but fundamentally we've got a long, we're getting now a relatively long period of operational data, which is giving us comfort around the performance of lithium ion battery projects.
So would you say that the sector has now come at a stage where new financing structures are being introduced, or are financiers still becoming comfortable with the asset class?
So from our experience, financing to date hasn't been a constraint for the growth of Zenobē's battery projects. We've raised over 350 million of debt over the last few years, and have a number of ongoing fundraising activities. And we're seeing significant appetite from the lending community to the assets. What we're looking at, and what the financiers are having to consider is, and for the asset classes, the amount of leverage and the tenor of the debt is really determined by the contracted revenue structure. And if you if you look at some of the more merchant projects, say developed by the listed developers, the amount of debt there and the tenor of their debt is significantly less to say some of the Zenobē projects, which are, you know, because of the more contracted nature of the projects and longer contracted revenues, are able to procure longer tenor debt than, say, than other more merchant projects. We're not seeing any real, at this moment in time, we're not seeing a huge amount of innovation in terms of the financing structure. It's more sort of traditional financing based on the cash available to service the debts and typical project finance metrics.
Thank you. And Gareth, I mean, you obviously kind of have a bit of an overview across the market because of advising different clients. What do you see on this one?
So what we're seeing is there isn't a significant availability of money on assets up to ready to build stage. I don't think battery storage technology is unique in that regard, unless those are projects which are part of framework deals. And there have been a number of framework deals, you know, we've noticed or that we've advised on that have involved Canadian money. There seems to have been quite a few of those. I mean, examples would include the likes of IMCO and Pulse, Brookfield, Cambridge Power, Octopus Exogen, RPC Eel Power. There's been quite a lot of Canadian money coming into this space. Also, we're starting to see a higher grade of institutional equity coming into these projects as well, particularly where it's to fund, I guess, an acquisition of ultimately construction projects or projects which are connected. And then finally, on the debt side, we were actually lender side on the Zenobi deal. So what was interesting, I think, to us above all, two features. One was the accordion feature that went in on that deal. But also, we saw some new banks coming into the market. For a long time, a market that had been dominated by the likes of NatWest, Santander, and MUFG. You know, we saw some new entrants coming in on that deal. So perhaps the debt market's getting a little bit more mature and used to the technology and understanding these projects.
Thank you, Gareth. That's very interesting to hear. And David, I'd like to have your take on the new financing structures before we move on to talking about new plays in the market, which is also another very interesting point.
No, I will say that I think I tend to agree with Ben on the differentiation between, let's say, two different business cases or business models, not the full merchant projects that, for example, we have been able to develop and to invest in, and the projects that have a high, let's say, proportion or percentage of contracted revenues. No, and I think that there are key differences there and probably in our experience with, let's say, full merchant right debt process is probably more challenging, especially if we are taking or the lenders are taking, you know, the classical infrastructure renewal approach. So things tend to be a bit different in the terms of the cash flow and the expectations for the batteries and, you know, unexpected volatility. And I think there is still some mechanisms that need to fine tuned in order to optimize, you know, the financial processes on those type of assets or projects.
Yeah, thank you for that. So we've already touched a couple of times so far on new players entering the energy storage sector in Europe. We've heard there's been new entries from equity and debt side alike, lots of institutional money, Canadian especially. Maybe more from Ben and David on this one. Would you agree on that? What have you seen while going through deals in this space? Who would you say are the main players in the energy storage space in Europe now? And you know, from which segments of the market is competition coming from?
I would say that from our perspective, at the end, we have seen, you know, depending on the regions and the countries, different, let's say, new players or incomers. Being said that, I think that still UK and the rest of the European countries and markets are still very, very fragmented. So at the end, there are a significant amount of players and the market needs to evolve.
Ben, I think probably the Zenobi deal is a very good example of new players coming into the market with KKR and others. What can you say on that front?
Yeah, I think as Gareth said, there's new appetite coming in from the US and Canada, as well as UK investors into the market. So completely agree with that. I think in terms of the competition and the challenge for developers in the UK and Europe, I would say the biggest challenge at the moment from what I can see is around the challenges of shortage of capital, as Gareth alluded to in the sort of second half of the last 12 months, but also supply chain constraints and making it a lot harder for smaller developers to build and own and operate assets. And I think that's becoming harder, and therefore the focus is on larger developers who have got those relationships with the suppliers to be able to develop the assets and procure the batteries.
And so we've talked about, you know, the technology, we've talked about financing structures and new players and possibly competition coming into the market. If looking at the investment pipeline, where are best investment opportunities at the moment and why, especially maybe like looking at Europe first and then North America?
I'll make a quick comment on what we're seeing. I mean, the UK for us in terms of what we're seeing remains the most developed market. But as I said earlier, pricing is tougher and volatility is lower. Also, the grid connection projects, the grid connection problems that these and other projects are facing is making the environment much more challenging. We are seeing quite a bit of appetite from developers here and in Europe, in the US, particularly attention being focused on Texas, Oklahoma, and also some of the other southern states. People are seeing opportunities to access a number of different incentives, and that's against the backdrop of the Inflation Reduction Act, which is generally making that market very frothy at the moment. We are seeing in Europe a bit more happening in Italy at the moment, although there's some debate about what the route to market answer is going to be over there, and also the Netherlands as well. Finally, some deal flow in Sweden. So it's a bit patchier in Northern and Central Europe in our experience, and appetite seems to have been diverted across the Atlantic into the US, at least for developer appetite at the moment. That's what we're seeing outside of the UK.
And David, what is FRV's view on this one, on the pipeline?
Well, I think that we have identified like three waves of countries now. Of course, I agree that the UK is probably the most complex one and more advanced in the world. The US and China, where we are not active, but looking at Europe, we think there is opportunity for the long term in Italy and Germany as well, and also in Spain. We see other, let's say, second wave of markets that will be pushed by subsidies or let's say, auctions, like, for example, Greece. And we see later on, you know, a three wave of promising markets, let's say, across the European level that might be interesting in the, let's say, mid long term. Beyond Europe, I will say that for us, Australia and Chile are key markets for us. And Australia is also, you know, in a very advanced state with big developments, with a big significant amount of potential projects there as well.
Thank you. And Ben, what is your view? I mean, is it, I think it's fairly established that the UK is the most advanced market at the moment. Obviously, you guys are based here, so is Zenobi. What are your views on the pipeline? Is it still very like UK focused / Europe, or are there broader plans?
Yeah, so I concur with Gareth and David, really, that that the UK is the most advanced market. Europe is quite patchy, with some activity in Italy, the Netherlands, the Nordics, and some seeing some projects now in Germany, but they're a lot more merchant, and some concerns around the revenues, which we need to get comfortable with, and then more globally, we are just seeing activity in Australia, have some assets in being developed in Australia as part of the Zenobi portfolio, and then in the US as well. I can't tell you too much about the US assets, but it's around sort of taking opportunity of the Inflation Reduction Act and the improvement in the economics that brings to the projects, but then also looking to work with the operators in the US, where they're facing some of the similar issues which we're facing in the UK, around the operation of their transmission assets and how battery projects can be used to help solve those issues.
Thank you. So we've touched on the grid a little bit in passing so far. But what is the role of the grid in the development of future energy storage projects? Are batteries in particular seen as a burden to the grid? What's the conversation there at the moment?
I think from my understanding, my perspective, batteries are seen as part of the solution for the transmission and distribution networks. And, you know, with the likes of the Pathfinder regime being put in place to solve some of those technical issues. I think I would say overall, though, that the deployment of batteries, particularly at the distribution level, is being led by the market and developers, the market responding to the market, which obviously is influenced by policy intervention and design, but really we see the DNOs and the other grid operators playing a pretty limited role in actually making deploying or procuring batteries put onto their grid. There's perhaps one, we've got one example at Zenobē which is contrary to that, in that Zenobē is working with Scottish and Southern around helping to put battery access onto the Shetland Islands to help solve a specific issue to do with potential risks around unavailability of interconnected between Shetland and mainland Scotland. But generally, I would say that the deployment of batteries has really been led by the market and the private sector responding to the market.
And the bid.
No, I share the same vision that Ben for us. Our understanding is that the storage is an enabler of the energy transition. At the end, the storage and specifically batteries can avoid or at least defer some of the capital investment that needs to be carried out on the transmission and the distribution level, and is key, you know, to strengthen the collaboration between developers, investors, and the DSOs and the TSO, right, in order to facilitate the quick introduction and eliminate the barriers that still remain for the development of this market and this technology in the network.
I think I would just add that in the UK, and I think that most of the conversation probably we're having is around standalone projects at the moment, which is where the deployment has been. Co-location is a completely different business model. But for standalone, I think the way that the system operator has modelled these assets and whether they're going to be viewed as importing, exporting at the same time hasn't really helped things. There's obviously a much broader program going on, or has been going on, about freeing up capacity where developers have been approached in relation to existing offers. And that's going to impact all technologies. Finally, we're starting to see a bit of a trade-off happening, which is instead of getting offered a connection date, which is probably now in the 2030s, that battery projects are being offered perhaps earlier dates. But the trade-off is that maybe they are connections which are susceptible to a high probability of interruption because of the need for grid reinforcement work. So I think for some of these projects, the trade-off that the developer is going to have to consider and think about the ultimate owner in this debate is, am I prepared to connect earlier, but in return for a much more frequent curtailment profile on my project? And so we're seeing a bit more of a focus of that being the key area on the development pipeline that's coming through with sooner dates on it.
Thank you. And what is the role of regulation in the sector at the moment? How are REMA, National Grid, Ofgem impacting the rules of the wholesale market? And are they impacting projection models? What are your views on this particular topic?
Yeah, if I may, I would say that at the end is core to the business model. No? Regulation, a clear regulation path and discussions, you know, around what is going to happen with, you know, the new reform on the market is key, you know, having a key understanding of those aspects and how this conversation will evolve will have a massive impact in the business models for good or bad. And at the end, everything that will be established during the reform, like the nodal or zonal pricing, the splitting of the wholesale, or the pay as bid as beside others will have a risk and an opportunity, or will bring an opportunity for this market and other technologies. So it's key for us to understand and to participate very actively in the definition of the new and the future of these markets. And of course, National Grid and Ofgem on their side also are instrumental in order to push the market and to facilitate the implementation of this technology and the integration of additional renewable into the network.
Thank you, David. Ben, what is your view on this one?
Yeah, so from an investor's perspective, uncertainty and regulatory uncertainty is never good, and it is a concern. I think at the moment we're ultimately getting comfortable that the measures being put in place will be designed to incentivize storage on the basis that storage is an essential part of the grid. And when we've done the detailed analysis on what's been looked at in terms of REMA, then it's going to be the case that most of the elements being consulted on are favourable to storage. So hopefully REMA will be positive or at least neutral for our investments in the sector. But ultimately, we'd prefer there to be less uncertainty.
Gareth, what are you hearing regulatory-wise from your clients?
In terms of REMA specifically, the sense is that there's quite a bit that is moving around. I mean, in terms of a legal perspective, there isn't really much for us to kind of pin down and advise them on other than looking at kind of the direction of travel. I think there isn't a huge amount to say other than it looks like the discussion is going down the tracks of splitting the wholesale market into separate markets for variable and firm power. And, does that create more volatility? Does that create more business opportunities for batteries? Discuss, potentially yes. So there's that, and there's a call for evidence that I think closes either today or closed yesterday. And hopefully we and others will look through that call for evidence and see if there's a bit more to get our teeth into. But I think that's kind of all we've seen on REMA specifically so far.
Thank you. It's been a very interesting discussion. I feel like we've covered quite a lot of ground here. I'd like to wrap up with a question about the challenges and the opportunities ahead for the sector. Ben, would you like to take the lead on that one?
Yeah, so I think from challenges, I would say it's around confidence in the revenues. The lower volatility this year to date haven't helped with that respect. And then it's around the supply chain. We've seen battery costs come down recently, but there are constraints around the supply chain. There's uncertainty around procurement of batteries from China, potential EU tariffs on batteries from China or from on the wider sector, and and the fact that the supply chain isn't particularly diverse, and it is difficult for small developers to be able to procure batteries and inverters. So they're the main challenges. The opportunity is that we're at the beginning of the energy storage sector or market. There's going to be a huge amount of opportunities over the next 10, 20 years. As we know, energy storage is going to play a fundamental role in the energy transition. There's going to be some exciting opportunities around different technologies and longer duration storage as well as some of the shorter duration investments we're seeing now.
Yeah, I will say that on top of Ben's comments, I will have probably at this stage, specifically for the connection constraints, I would say that these are the biggest challenge we are facing right now in the country. Beyond that, I will say that for us is now, the let's say the ability and the speed on how we can transfer the knowledge and the know-how from one country where we have been working for 5 years to other regions, and how quick and fast we can, target and evolve in those markets. Due to the differences in the market regulation, in the market opportunities, and also in the specific challenge for each of the markets, and across Europe specifically, but beyond Europe as well.
Yeah, look, I think I started by saying that we'd seen the first half of the year that was much more buoyant and a second half that looked more challenging. And, you know, echoing the comments that have been made by David and Ben, I think that, you know, the grid continues to be a challenge, and definitely the supply chain has been a challenge as well. But that said, we think, based on what the clients are telling us, that, you know, that there are going to be some interesting new markets opening up through Pathfinder and other, you know, and other routes to market that make the revenue stack quite interesting for batteries going forward, and a stack that's going to change and evolve. I really do hope, finally, that you know, we've talked in this podcast about the UK being a really developed market. Every market will have its differences, but I would like to think that, you know, the huge amount of experience and know-how and the knowledge bank of the people involved in these projects is translatable into other markets, and that we can see that developer expertise being taken forward and overseas, and, you know, really, really sort of seeing that push from UK developers in a way that, for example, Nordic developers have done with wind. That's my hope. That's my my expectation and takeaway for the future. That's what I'd like to see.
Thank you. That is a very good note to end on. And thank you very much again for participating to Inspiratious Energy Storage webinar. Thanks to Infra Capital and Zenobi's Ben Francis, FFV's David Menendez, and Gowling WLG's Gareth Baker for joining me today. We look forward to seeing you all in London on the 18th of October at our Energy Storage Summit. Thank you very much again.